Willkommen bei Augen geradeaus, heute wieder mit einem speziellen Gast, mit General Ben Hodges, dem Chef der US Army in Europe. Good afternoon, General. Thank you for taking the time on the fringes of the Munich Security Conference, where time is in very short supply. So thank you very much for answering questions here. What I like to start you to ask you first, it's not so long ago, I think in 2013, that the last U.S. main battle tanks left Germany. Mm-hmm. And now we see a return of this, well, some say obsolete fighting machines. What's, you're looking as you don't think so, what's the reason for this switch, for this changing in of attitude toward U.S. tanks in Europe and in Germany?
Well, first of all, of course, the Abrams tank, Thomas, is the best tank in the world.
Well, we talk about that later, of course.
yes, we just 2 years ago, we're pulling all of the equipment out as part of the recognition of a new security environment and cost-cutting measures, much like everybody else. The whole world changed here within the last year. Now, the U.S. Army, our Chief of Staff, General Odierno, recognized that even as we got smaller in life after the ISAF mission, he still had a responsibility to provide land capability to the combatant commanders of each geographic region. So U.S. European Command, General Breedlove, Central Command, General Rodriguez, Africa Command, and so on. So the Army had already made a decision to provide a regionally aligned force that would rotate to Europe for training, to maintain relationships, et cetera. And so they decided then that we would have one battalion of armored vehicles that would remain at Grafenwehr at the training area. Last year, after the illegal annexation of Crimea, the Army decided to increase that in response to an entire brigade of equipment that will stay in Europe. So this is an important part of the assurance measures that the U.S. in which the U.S. is participating. We have a brigade, an armored brigade, that comes over for 6 months out of the year from the States and conducts exercises in Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, and this summer we'll expand that into Romania, Bulgaria, and Georgia. The equipment, by the end of the year, the entire brigade of equipment will remain on the ground in Europe. So we are reversing a decision that was made 2 or 3 years ago to put that back into Europe.
So you're pre-deploying part of the material in the Eastern NATO countries, is that right? So it's not all in Germany, but most of it along the old bloc lines, actually.
The decision for the location has not been made yet. That will be the decision of SECUR, General Breedlove, in his U.S. Hat as commander of U.S. European mm-hmm. Command in Stuttgart. So we are doing surveys this week, in fact, in each of those countries, the Baltic countries, Poland, Romania, Bulgaria. We will make a recommendation to General Breedlove based on, most importantly, does it fit his strategic design, but also does it support the U.S. ambassadors in each of those countries? And then finally, those nations would have to want to have it there. So maybe it's only a company 12, 14 vehicles, or perhaps part of a battalion, 30, 40 vehicles that would be in maintenance facilities so that they could be cared for during when they're not being used. For sure, at least a large portion will be in Grafenwehr because of the training area there, so that forces come over, they can train on them. Some of this will probably go into Mannheim to Coleman Barracks, which is an American installation which is going to be turned back over to Germany at some time in the near future. We need that as an interim location because if the decision is made to position any equipment in Eastern European countries, it will still be sometime in 2016 before they were ready.
How much is this these decisions aligned with what the NATO is planning with the VJTF, mm-hmm. with the spearhead force? Is it something on the side the U.S. is doing anyway on a bilateral basis, or is this in any way synchronized?
Well, the good news, of course, is that while this is a unilateral U.S. decision by the Army to always have equipment ready for the joint commander, in this case, General Breedlove, it dovetails very well with the decision of the alliance to provide assurance to the nations that are allies that are closest to Russia. But it also represents a U.S. contribution to the adaptation, the readiness action plan, mm-hmm. That was also agreed upon by all 28 nations at the Wales summit. So, you know, yesterday, of course, from the defense ministerials, the framework nations for the VJTF were agreed. Germany, UK, and so on, Netherlands. The U.S. will be a part of the VJTF in terms of enablers, logistics, I think. And also, I think there's a lot of potential for us supporting the NATO response force. And the VJTF is the spearhead of the NRF, as you know. The U.S. 2 years ago declared that we would provide soldiers for the force pool of the NRF. Mm-hmm. So we're already in the NRF. I think we have a role with logistical support.
So it's C-17 or something like that?
Well, of course, that's Air Force. I am sure that the Air Force will be a part of that, but I can't speak for mm-hmm. them from the Army. What we are very good at is large-scale logistics, transportation on the ground, movement of ammunition, fuel, to manage facilities, seaports to receive equipment, railheads. I think that's a place where we can be very helpful. In fact, we will use money from the ERI, European Restructuring Reassurance Initiative, that the U.S. Congress has authorized. We will use some of that money to improve railheads, for example, in those countries in the East to make it easier to move heavy equipment by rail.
So U.S. money is supporting the NATO effort in that case, or is that something which runs parallel, not necessarily united?
Yeah. They're not connected in terms of the same document, mm-hmm. but it is how the U.S. contributes to enabling the alliance, doing its part in terms of assurance, doing its part in terms of creating capability. You know, the U.S. is an ally to those countries, whether or not this is a NATO mm-hmm. operation, if you will, or a NATO situation. You saw my president last year mm-hmm. when he stood there in Poland, when he stood there in Lithuania, I think, in Tallinn, and said, you know, we will defend mm-hmm. our ally.
So you mentioned the U.S. Army is pretty good at logistics. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's an unfair question, but if you look at the European allies, are they up to those standards?
I think what the U.S. can offer is in the large scale, the coordination and management of logistics. Each nation will bring a capability. Certainly in Germany, I mean, as with so much of the U.S. Army located here, so much of the alliance infrastructure is here. Germany will be a critical part of that, the rail network, the road network, the industrial power of whatever is required. But again, also, this is part of the responsibility that each nation has. As General Breedlove says, defense begins at home. Each nation has a responsibility to do its part, not just in terms of spending 2% of their GDP, which they all agreed to do, but in terms of having a sustained ability to conduct operations when it's required.
So it's not the U.S. will deliver the logistics, which some countries might fail to deliver?
Well, if there's a NATO mission and the U.S. is involved in it, we are never going to allow a mission failure. But I think the expectation will be that each nation does its part, for sure.
I'm just wondering, maybe it's also an unfair question, but that some countries...
You're good at unfair questions.
I'm sorry about that. That some countries just might decide, if we won't do it, the U.S. will do it, and they have the larger pockets.
That's, our alliance came together in Wales like I've never seen before. I've been a NATO soldier now for almost 35 years, and... The unanimity I'm seeing in NATO and in the EU, thanks to leadership by the Bundeskanzler, the nations are more committed than I've seen. Am I happy with what everybody's done? No, of course not. I think people still need to do, you know, still need to do more. But this is the nature of an alliance. Also, you've got 28 sovereign nations. Some nations see a bigger threat coming from the Mediterranean, for example, or from Africa, than maybe they do from Russia. But yet, even with that, and even though so many countries are economically tied to Russia, the fact that everybody is sticking together on sanctions, is sticking together. You saw the unanimity coming out of the defense ministerials yesterday. I think that gives me a lot of reason for optimism.
Sometimes you might get the impression that the alliance is sailing very hard along the borders of the NATO-Russia Founding Act, which prohibits, or where the alliance says we won't deploy substantial combat troops on the territory of the new members, that's the eastern members. Is that something which is tested from NATO's and the U.S. side? How much can you do without violating what you decided to stick to?
Well, let's think about who's violated what. I mean, President Putin has violated the sovereign border of a country. A country that has territory that resulted from agreements with Russia. So he is the one that has violated borders. He is the one that has violated agreements. He is the one that is injecting incredible amounts of equipment, ammunition, high technology, not just in the Crimea, but in eastern Ukraine. That's what has precipitated this current situation. The Minsk agreement that was signed just in September, the line has already moved, and the proxies, the rebels that President Putin backs, have declared that, you know, any agreement, the line from Minsk is no longer the line, that any new agreement is going to be this new line, wherever it is. So I think for somebody to say that, well, you know, the West maybe, we might bear some responsibility for this because of exercises.
Sorry, you got me wrong. Sorry, let me be a little bit more precise. Okay. NATO has decided to stick to the NATO-Russia Founding Act.
Okay.
And certain provisions in this Founding Act. Now, nobody really knows what substantial combat troops means when it comes to Eastern.
I see.
Is the West testing what they could do, staying within the boundaries of the NATO-Russia Founding Act?
I don't think, not in a specific way like that. You know, the decision was made to assure allies, so exercises will be taking place all over Eastern Europe. They've already begun and will continue throughout the year, whether they're exercises hosted by those nations, or maybe they're joint exercises that are conducted in those countries. But those are exercises, not full-time deployments. I mean, there's no plan that I'm aware of to build a new base, for example, an American base in Poland or an American base in Latvia. We have soldiers that deploy there to exercise as part of Atlantic Resolve, but they stay in Latvian or Lithuanian barracks. What we are doing is helping to improve the quality of the training area. That's what the president authorized. We have been conducting exercises in Ukraine the last 3 years, Rapid Trident exercise, which was a very small, typically on a sort of a peacekeeping type scenario. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Russia, I mean, the NATO-Russia Council has not been abolished. It's been suspended. The interaction obviously is not the same as it was, but we still want to keep that door open.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're fixing to have to leave.
All right. Yeah, so we have to. Thank you very much for your time, General.
No, I'd like to do this again.